Hi, Gary, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you, Omar. Really good.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. So, Gary, firstly, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. I've been talking to you for months now. We've had many, many conversations prior to this, both about what we're going to talk about and about other things as well, about cars, about clothes. It really has been great getting to know you and whatnot. So I really appreciate your time today.
Okay, my pleasure. And I'm glad that we share the same love of T-shirts and things.
We absolutely do.
Son of a tailor, I think.
I can see you're wearing a son of a tailor today, right? And yeah. Kay, if you're listening, Kay is my guy at Son of a Tailor. Kay, if you're listening, I need you to look after Gary, please. he's a big fan of what you guys are doing, just like I am. So, you know, please do look after him. I'd appreciate that as a favor to
Brilliant.
Me. So, Gary, look, as I said, I've spent a lot of time with you. I've gotten to know you. You're a great, great guy. And what you've managed to do with your business is absolutely, to say it's amazing is an understatement. I have a great amount of admiration for what you've been able to create and the reasons why you've created it. But for those who haven't been able to spend the amount of time that I have with you, why don't you tell everyone, who are you, what do you do, and what is the Diamond Store?
Sure. I'm Gary Ingram. I'm the managing director and founder of the Diamond Store. We're a UK-based online jeweler. So about 15 years ago, we set up as an online jeweler when websites were in their infancy and people were a bit unsure about buying online. And to be honest, for the first 5 or 6 years, we spent our time building the brand, building trust, people buying jewelry online. And as we sit today, I think we have the largest range of jewelry that you can buy in the UK from one retailer. I think we've got 6,500 products. We offer great jewelry, great prices, and we've got over 220,000 customers currently.
Jesus. And you guys are shipping across the world, right?
Yeah, mostly what we do is to focus on the UK and Ireland, but we will ship anywhere in the world. Yeah.
Now, this is quite interesting, particularly when it comes to the development of e-commerce, right? Because there are certain industries which lend itself very, very well to e-commerce. Mm-hmm. Jeff Bezos very famously said is that when he was looking at creating a company, he looked at something with the most categories and books was the best thing to go for e-commerce, which mm-hmm. makes perfect sense. The book industry lends itself very, very well to online purchasing. If I was to think of one industry that lends itself the worst to online purchasing, it would be jewelry.
Yeah.
You know, jewelry is very known for having a very visceral and kinesthetic experience. You have to see it under certain lighting. You have to do this. You have to hold it. You have to put it on your finger or your wrist or your neck. What were you thinking at the time when you thought, hey, you know what? I want to start a business. Let's probably take the most difficult product category and try and flog it online. What was going on there?
I'd had my own frustration at trying to buy jewelry in shops. And it's quite intimidating, actually. If you walk into a jewelry shop, there's only so many times you can ask, can I have a look at that? Can I have a look at this? Can I have a look at that? After about the fourth time, I think it, and I know that jewelers don't want you to feel it, but you would feel like you're starting to impose a little. And absolutely. I felt that if you could offer that, an experience, and at the time 15 years ago that experience wasn't quite there, but we're there now with video and not virtual reality, what's the other one,
consultations,
no, the
augmented reality,
apologies. So yeah. You know where all this is going is that in the end we will be able to offer a better experience than in store, in a sense. I think what I've learned over that time is two things. One is that you have to build your brand so that the customers trust that when the item arrives, if it really isn't something they love, and we do want our customers to love the jewelry, that they can send it back and get their money back, no problem. You know, it's important to us that every time you catch a glimpse of one of our rings or one of our earrings or whatever, that you feel proud of wearing it and you love wearing your jewelry. And I think that the other thing that we wanted to do was, you're based in London, so for you, there's quite a lot of jewelry shops around. But if you go around the rest of the UK, quite a lot of people don't live near amazing jewelry shops. So, you know, if you take my parents, they live in Cornwall. They're 40 minutes from the nearest big town. When they get to the town, there's a couple of jewelers. They don't have a great deal of stock because it's expensive to stock jewelry. So we wanted to take jewelry where people could view as much as they wanted in the comfort of their own home and just take the time, just browsing, looking at things, and having a good look. Now, some great things that the e-commerce allows you to do, it allows you to zoom in on product in a way that you actually can't do that in a shop too much, because you can look at it, but you can't zoom in on it.
Agreed.
And the other thing that we developed, I think it was about 10 years ago, we built a video studio. And we decided that if we weren't going to have shops, we've really got to video everything.
Yeah.
So we can get models in, we've videoed everything.
I don't know how you do this. Logistically, but yeah, almost hard. Every single product that I've clicked on your website, and you've got one hell of a product range when it comes to sheer size. You scroll down to the bottom of the page, and there's a bloody accompanying video with all of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's madness.
Yeah, it's a great team effort to get that done. And what we wanted to do, the reason we wanted to do it and the whole premise behind it was that we wanted the customers to understand scale. Because I think the hardest thing with jewelry is, how will it look on my hand? How will it look on my finger? And so if we have a set routine for rings, earrings, bracelets and pendants of how a model would show that off, to give the customers as much idea about the product before they try it on as they could possibly have without physically trying it on.
Makes sense.
The other part of this is that actually, if you go to a lot of jewelry stores, they don't have everything on for you to try on necessarily there and then either.
That's an understatement.
Yeah. So a lot of the time they have to order it, or they won't have the size that will fit you anyway. So, but you can see it and feel it. And for some customers, you know, ultimately they're going to need the shop experience. They're going to have to feel it before they can buy it. But equally, there's a huge amount of people, especially anyone under the age of 35, that's a lot more open to buying it, trying it. If don't like it, send it back. But
absolutely.
In all honesty, we get very low returns compared to fashion industry. Our returns are minimal.
That is quite interesting. And I do want to touch on this kind of store experience very, very quickly, because it was the topic of one of our first ever conversations. I don't know if you remember. Where I was telling you the experience that I had with certain jewelry stores that I went to. Yeah. You know what? Bugger it. I'm going to name them. Harry Winston, Tiffany, Boodles, and what was the other one? Graff. That was the other one.
All big brands. Great brands.
All big brands. Really, really lovely. Not going to knock the product or whatever. And I guess it's just human psychology. But like you said, it doesn't matter how beautiful the smile is of the person who's dealing with you and how patient they are. But after the second or the third time that you've asked to view something, you start to feel bad. Mm. Now, when you're out looking at bits, you're not always there to buy. Sometimes you're there to look, to go back, to think, to look somewhere else, to think. And it's this feeling of, oh my God, okay, I've now used about 15 minutes of this person's time. I'm committed.
Yeah.
You know, and next time I come in this store, they're going to be like, oh, there's the time waster.
I don't think they think that. I think we think that.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter how lovely
they
are. I don't think it doesn't even matter how lovely they are. And generally speaking, the service is fabulous.
Yeah.
You know, I can only count on maybe two or three fingers where I felt uncomfortable, but you know, typically they are always extremely lovely, but I think it's just part of human psychology where we just start feeling, oh God, you know, are they going to think this about me? Or do I need to tell them that I'm not going to be buying today? And it's a stressful process. And I think everyone can relate to something like that.
I think there's also, I haven't walked into a jewelry store as a consumer for a while, but I think also... where we're so used to looking at e-commerce websites now, everybody is really, especially after COVID, we're used to actually going to a website, doesn't matter whether it's jewelry, fashion, glasses, whatever it would be.
Yep.
And we can hone in on a color, a style, a price, zunk. Yep. And we can get those products right in front of our face within two or three clicks, exactly we filter to what we want. And I think one of the challenges probably with walking into a jewelry store is that we can't go and go, can we have a look at everything you've got between 250 and 500, ruby rings, white gold, size S, in a claw setting, because they can't get it together that quickly. I wouldn't have thought. And we're used to doing those things. So I think filtering is a big part. Be interesting to see how it all evolves. But I mean, look, shops and high streets have a place, and online has a place. And I think the two live together, and we serve different customers probably. And there is some overlap, but yeah, for
agreed.
Sure.
Now, the interesting thing that struck me after the experience that I've had with the big box retailers, with the big names, the Magic Circle, whatever you want to call them, was one thing. And it makes you believe that the value of their products is absolute, that there is something going on in the background that justifies that price because of the quality of the product. And to a certain extent, there is some truth to that. You know, if you're getting a Fabergé ring, or you're getting a Graff ring or something like that, the level of finishing on those products is extraordinary. It's to an extremely high level. But does it justify £20,000 or £30,000? Not entirely sure there. Is a lot of it because it says Fabergé on there? Perhaps. These are thoughts that I started having. Now, those thoughts were only solidified when I came across your website, where I saw a ring with exactly the same stone size as what I'd already bought, with exactly the same credentials of the diamond that I had already bought, for around a third the price. That was very concerning for me, to be completely honest. And as you can imagine, yeah, generates a certain amount of skepticism.
Yeah.
Because the first thing that I thought is, okay, what dodgy thing are these lot doing? What's going on? Because it doesn't say Fabergé. It doesn't say Cartier. It doesn't say Graff. What's going on here? What are they doing? What corners are they cutting? Okay, I then conducted some further research, and I understood the basics of a diamond. I understood the basics of metallurgy, like white gold or yellow gold. What exactly is it? What is the cost price of these products? What's going on? You know, how much is this brand tax that I'm paying, this premium tax that I'm paying to these companies? So after I did that research, I thought, you know what, I need to get in contact with you guys, because this makes sense now. Now it's making sense why these guys are charging one thing and the diamond store is charging another. One thing that it opened up to me is the lack of education when it comes to diamonds in general. Could you explain to me, when it comes to natural diamonds, what people are looking for when they're going to be buying a diamond?
The first thing that centers around is budget, because there's a fine, once you have a budget, you have to balance out what you can spend against the qualities and sizes that you look for in your diamond. Just to go back on your point about the brand tax or whatever, if you break down a single diamond ring, that's because it's the easiest thing to break down. There's literally two components. One is a diamond, and one is a metal band, whether that's a white gold, yellow gold, or platinum band. And those two things go together. If the diamond is certified, GIA, IGL certified, these are companies that certify diamonds independently, then no matter where you buy the ring, the diamond is certified. It's the same diamond.
It's the same
and
diamond.
The metal band, you don't have different qualities of platinum. The great thing about the UK is that all items have to be hallmarked at one of the assay offices, so they're checked for their purity. You can't have better gold than other gold. If it's 18 karat gold, it doesn't matter where you buy that, it's 18 karat gold.
So this is actually just something I really want to clarify, because this is a point that I've received so many occasions where people are, excuse my language, brand whores, you know, where they are just completely hell-bent on the fact that one brand is better than the other. An 18 karat gold used by one brand is not better than an 18 karat gold used by another if they've both been hallmarked in the UK, correct? 18 karat gold is 18 karat gold.
Yeah, same quality. It can't be any different.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that.
If it was any different, it would then start becoming 20 karat or 22 karat, which means it's got more gold within the, as a percentage of the actual metal. Cool. So yeah, all 18 karat gold is equal, or platinum is equal. For example, platinum in the UK is 95% platinum content in, in the ring or the earring. And it, any harder, any more platinum, and it will start to get a little bit soft. So it's hallmark platinum 950. And that's what that means.
Oh, right.
So everything's equal.
Okay.
So, if you work on that premise,
If
you work on that premise, everything else is kind of a brand tax. So then going back to the diamond, I'd say things have changed in the last 5 or 6 years. So one of the trends we've seen coming over from America was the introduction of halo rings, which is where you get a single stone in the middle, or a cluster of stones in the middle, and then other stones around the outside. So buying, why has that happened? Because we are in a world where people wanted to have a little bit more bang for their buck, a little bit more, a bigger diamond, but didn't necessarily have the ability to buy it. So this goes back to the first point. You've got to set your budget out as to what realistically you can spend. Then it's a balancing act between choosing the right color and the right clarity and the right cut for you. What does that mean in layman's terms? Diamonds are graded D to Z. D being colorless, which means that when you look at it, there's nothing perceivable color in there. I would say anywhere down to about an H. So D to H color, very hard for somebody to tell, to find any color within that diamond.
Sure.
So actually within that scale, I'd say that's a pretty good range. And again, with flaws, the bigger the diamond, the more the flaws become apparent. So it goes back to the budget scenario. So I don't deal with 100,000 diamonds. That's not what our customers buy. So flaws that you might see on a 2-carat diamond, you're not going to notice them on a 0.5-carat diamond of the same. You're just not going to notice it with the naked eye. And what we did actually a long time ago, we thought, well, rather than confuse all this, we'll come up with 3 or 4 qualities and we'll stick to those qualities. We'll have one for what we call the connoisseur, somebody who's done a lot of research, probably like yourself, and understands exactly what they want. We'll give them that diamond. And then what we'll do is go somewhere in the middle, which is what we'd recommend. And what that would be is a near colorless stone, like an H color, with an HSI quality. What does that mean? It's got small inclusions that you're not going to see with a naked eye. And for most of our customers, that's what I would recommend. It's a great balance between budget, color, quality. And then we have another range slightly under that, where people might expect a slightly bigger stone, slightly bigger diamond, slightly bigger look. And we're able to meet that without sacrificing too much on the other qualities. When I look at other diamond sellers, other businesses, especially online, it can get really confusing because they literally give you millions of diamonds to choose from. And you're worrying about all those little points. And so we just try to simplify it by offering 3 or 4 qualities. That's it.
That makes perfect sense. And just to clarify as well, you're talking about diamonds in general, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are, in fact, 2 types of diamonds, which is, again, was another rabbit hole that I ended up finding out. Because going onto your website, you see that, okay, your natural diamonds, okay, it's about a third the price of what everyone else is charging. But then you see certain diamond products that you've got that are even cheaper.
Yeah, lab diamonds.
Lab diamonds. And you're like, right, okay, fake diamonds. Lovely. Okay, lab diamonds are fake diamonds. Lab diamonds are like a cubic zirconia or a moissanite or something like that, right? That's what kind of goes through your head, particularly because it's even cheaper, but not slightly cheaper. You know, depending on the diamond that you go for, significantly cheaper. I think that the bigger the diamond, the more internally flawless it is when you go for the D's and the and whatnot. The more you save essentially on compared to a natural diamond. Can you explain what a lab diamond is and why you guys have kind of adopted it very, very strongly? I think you guys may have been a very early adopter on this whole lab diamond scene. So what is a lab diamond and why did you guys go for it?
Okay. So traditionally a diamond is mined and then processed, and it goes through a lot of processes to get to the end user. Everybody knows that. Lab diamonds are what they are. They're grown in a laboratory. They actually start off with a small crystal of diamond, of mined diamond, and then immense pressure is put onto that tiny crystal, and it crystallizes and forms and gets bigger. So it's created within a lab. Its chemical makeup is identical to a mined diamond. Its hardness, brilliance, its shine, its sparkle, fire, everything is identical to a mined diamond. There are testing tools which will tell the difference. But to the man in the street, you cannot tell the difference between the two. So one's created by the earth and one's created by the scientists. That's kind of how to look at it.
Sure. The testing tools that I saw a video there, just to digress slightly, I saw a video the other day which showed that there was something to do with the fluorescence of the diamond, which was, is that one of the testing tools that they use?
Yeah, I believe so. It's just a tiny point of difference between the two.
Yeah, and that's a fairly new piece of technology that they've used, because prior to that, they really couldn't tell the difference, right?
No, and it's been very hard. So we were an early adopter. Why were we an early adopter? Because we're always trying to offer our customers choice, and we're trying to offer them value. And we didn't want to be a company that said, we're not going to offer you lab diamonds because we believe in mined diamonds. And we didn't want to be a company that said, we're only going to do lab diamonds because we don't believe in mined diamonds. What we wanted to do, and which is, I think, where we started, you and I met and got in touch, was because we offer both. We want to give customers the choice of what they want to buy. So lab diamonds, in our opinion, give customers access to a far bigger diamond for an amazing price. And the thing that we've grown to really appreciate more, and that we're trying to get across more, is that they're more ethical, they're more sustainable. But at the end of the day, all of the ultimate decision comes down to the customer. Are they a mined diamond customer or are they a lab diamond customer? It doesn't matter to us. We'll offer you both. You make your decision based on what you believe. But sustainable and ethical is a big thing for especially younger people. Again, we're going back to our younger demographic. They want to know that it's sustainable and ethical. We also recently, we're just getting all the content ready for the website, all of the gold that we use in the making of our lab diamond products is recycled gold. So we're not buying gold that's been mined anymore. We're only using recycled gold. So that lab diamond item that somebody buys is truly ethical and sustainable. It's, you know.
You're kidding me. I had no idea that you guys were going down the recycled gold route. That's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's brilliant. We're just getting all the content ready to go on the site, and we had to check out with certain suppliers and things that everything that was being done, but we're there.
That's huge.
Yeah,
it's essentially you've got a, like you said, no holes in the ground piece of jewelry, because I think one thing that particularly my generation, the I guess you could call us the millennial generation, right? Anyone between the ages of, let's say, 23 and 33. You know, we are now becoming very, very adamant in understanding how these products are made and are they destroying the environment. And unfortunately, mining precious stones in general is extremely destructive to the environment and economically destructive to certain communities around the world, especially if it's done wrong.
Yeah, if it's done wrong, yes.
Yeah. But I think this is a really important point that should be hit home. Number one, a lab diamond is imperceptible to a natural diamond. It is a natural diamond, just grown under different circumstances, grown in a lab as opposed to grown in the earth's crust.
It's not created from other materials. It's created from
it's carbon
diamonds and it crystal. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's carbon. It's exactly the same. And you know, they say that they have these testing tools to tell the difference. And I think they've really tried very, very hard. The natural diamond industry has tried extremely hard to try and find some way that they can determine the difference. Because to me, when I first found out about diamonds, I thought, well, the diamond industry is finished, isn't it? You know, natural diamonds are gone. Why would anyone spend, you know, 30 to 40% extra on something that was grown in the Earth's core. In the Earth's crust. Why on earth would someone do that? But of course, there is a market for natural diamonds. People like something that is a natural product. There is a lack of romanticism to a connoisseur, knowing that something was grown in a chamber, as opposed to something that was that was mined out of the ground. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
So that's something that's quite interesting. But I think a really important point about lab diamonds is the fact that there is no environmental destruction involved.
Correct.
You aren't digging. You aren't mining. You don't really have that many people working on growing a single diamond. It's very much a set it and forget it type thing. You just chuck it in a chamber and leave it there to develop over time. So yeah. You could have a couple of people working on a single diamond as opposed to hundreds of people working in a mine. Can I just ask when a lab diamond is being formed? And one thing that I want you to touch on is colored diamonds as well, because that's something that's quite interesting for me. Because typically for the layman, a diamond with color in there is immediately less valuable than a clear diamond.
Depends on the color.
Yes. And I'd like you to kind of talk about that, but is the color controllable? Because I think it's the introduction of boron in a diamond that decides on what color it's going to be. But that's just some research I've done, but it's the amount of boron that's in the diamond that decides on how much color is in there. But can these guys control what color a diamond turns out by the end of it? Or is it just is it just luck? What the credentials of a diamond is?
I'm going to have to come back to you on that one.
Okay. We're going to defer on that one.
Okay, I don't know if they can do the.
Sure. Because one thing that I was thinking is that could someone essentially say, hey, I want a D flawless 30 carat lab diamond, and they can just pop that into a computer and generate that like a 3D printer.
No. Okay. So the other part of this is whenever a lab diamond is being created, in the same way that when you mine a mine diamond, it comes out and it has to be cut and it has to be polished up. And actually, you don't know what you're going to get. That's the other part of this. It's not controllable. It's not controllable in terms of size, quality, clarity, nothing. It's uncontrollable.
Perfect.
The color diamonds, I'll come back to you on. Yeah.
No, please go ahead.
So the color diamonds I'll come back to you on. Interestingly, again, we are just about to launch a range of colored diamonds as well. And then we'll have a lot more information about how they're formed, the colored lab diamonds.
Sure.
But as far as I'm aware, you can't control that. You have to start off with the raw material.
Perfect. Okay. And again, I think that's a very common misconception is once again, people believe that the value of a lab diamond is, the uniqueness of lab diamonds are affected because they believe that whatever you want, you can just make because you can alter the environments and what the environment that's necessary for a beautiful diamond, you can just make that. And that's obviously not the case. It's as random of a diamond selection as it is mining it from the ground.
Yeah, it's not a production line. It's not producing a car or pressing some plastic. This is a time-consuming process, typically 6 to 8 weeks to produce a lab diamond. It's uncontrollable, the result.
So if you do get an exceptional diamond, it's as special as it is finding an exceptional diamond in the ground, right?
Yeah, of course. And you've got knowledge that it's sustainable and ethical at the same time.
Indeed, which is a huge thing. I think actually that's probably the biggest selling point of a lab diamond, particularly for my generation.
Yeah.
Purely because of we are now, it's very difficult to guarantee that a natural diamond has been sustainably and ethically produced. It's very, very difficult to get that kind of, even if it's GIA certified. I think that's the Gemological Institute of America, right?
Correct. Yeah. That's the best known.
That's the best one. Then you've got the other ones. GIA is probably the most well-recognized one. Even if it is, that doesn't mean that it was ethically produced. Is that the case?
diamonds have quite a strict process to go through. I mean, because I think if you went back many years, then I think it could be a case. But I mean, diamonds go through quite a rigorous process to get to an end user now. So
makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. But the whole point is they've still got to be mined. There's still a lot of work that has to go in to get that diamond out of the ground. And the second thing, and part of that is it's reflected in the cost, of course. That's why you've got a price disparity between the two.
And of course, you guys are even able to because there are some brick and mortar stores which are selling the lab diamonds as well, but you guys are able to even push that further because you don't have the overheads of the brick and mortars as well. I think that's also an important point to put across.
Yeah. And our whole ethos is about offering as much value for money as we can to our consumers, our customers. So in essence, whatever we can save, we'll pass on. And the more we can save, the more we can pass on. So we launched a big range of lab diamonds. And there's two things to touch on. One is that when we get into the engagement rings and some of the bigger lab diamonds that we sell, we use GIA certification. So we're sending these diamonds off to be certified by the GIA as to prove what they are is what they are. So in the same way that a mined diamond has a certificate, the lab diamond does too. Secondly, I don't know if you've noticed this yourself in the last few weeks, but Pandora made a huge announcement. Pandora now only selling lab-grown diamonds.
Indeed, yeah.
So that, in a way, that's put a seal of approval on lab diamonds, I think, when a big brand like that moves into lab. But we saw it a couple of years ago. I think, I'm pretty certain, we've got the largest range of lab diamond products in the UK right now.
Extraordinary. And I did come across that, actually, the announcement of Pandora. And I thought that was, it kind of, you know what that reminded me of? That reminded me of Mercedes making electric cars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, that's what that reminded me of.
They validate Tesla then.
Exactly. Yeah. Tesla has now got the seal of approval. And what's actually happened is Mercedes have inadvertently shot themselves in the foot in this particular thing, because what they've said is that Tesla were right and we were wrong.
Yeah.
You know, where Mercedes were making bigger engines and, you know, more gas guzzling vehicles. Now, all of a sudden, they've done a complete 180, and now they've said that they're going to stop production of all internal combustion cars by 2030. Is in fact admitting defeat to Tesla. So the way that I saw it is, it immediately made me think of you, and I was like, "Oh, well, Gary's won," you know. So, that's kind of what it reminded me of.
It's interesting. When we first launched them, it took customers a little while to get their mind around because they were unknown. It took the staff who, for years, you know, all the team here, for years have been used to dealing with mined diamonds to get their mind around it. But if I tell you that the last piece of jewelry I gave my wife was a lab diamond bracelet, it probably says everything you need to know. Yes.
Yeah. And she was none the wiser.
She wanted a lab diamond bracelet because it's ethical, it's sustainable, it's better value.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that, I mean, we've gone a long way, and a lot of our customers are loving having the lab, and a lot of our customers love having the choice of buying mine too. And I don't see us ever veering away to go one way or the other. I don't see us only selling lab. Only, I sell us always offering both, and just coming back and letting the customers decide what it is they want rather than us dictating what they should buy.
And I think that's what I truly admire about what you guys are doing, because, you know, you're producing things for those who are extremely budget conscious, which is it's something which I think has plagued the young generation for so long. You know, people delay their entire engagement because they can't afford the ring that they want. I mean, it's a real thing. You know, it's a real problem, particularly with this Instagram culture that we have now, where people are posting these real big rocks on their on their fingers. But people don't realize that maybe that's, you know, these celebrities, they have jewelry companies providing them jewelry on loan you know, these million-pound rings that aren't really owned by them. They're just on loan to them. And they feel under pressure. And this pressure is then passed over to a relationship. And I have friends who haven't gotten engaged because they can't afford the ring that their significant other wants or the ones that they've chosen. And unfortunately, jewelry companies thrive on that pressure. You know, they want people to have to save up for months and months and months to buy one of their rings. You know, this kind of toxic buying culture is something that they rely on almost. They want this to be an extreme aspirational purchase when it doesn't necessarily need to be.
There's an element of aspiration in there. Look, there's a lot of pressure on guys when they're buying an engagement ring. Many, many pressures. Because you've got your social standing, so people are going to look at the ring.
Everyone's going to look at it. Especially if you've got it on bloody Instagram.
You've got your other half social standing. You've got the in-laws, the parents. You've never bought one before. It's a scary process.
It is.
And I come back to the original point I made about buying a diamond ring, buying a diamond, buying an engagement ring. An engagement ring is a very important purchase because it's a moment in your life. It's a landmark, the biggest landmark occasion you're going to have, I think, to be honest.
Agreed.
But it didn't need to be that scary. If you stick to your budget and buy to budget is my advice. A lot of customers we know, and sometimes it's frowned upon, sometimes not. A lot of customers we know upgrade at a later stage. Because at the end of the day, life cycles change. As you become older, you could have more disposable income. And a lot of people do upgrade later. I think the most important thing is to buy to budget and buy to what you think she will love. Another interesting part about engagement, there's two other interesting things with engagement rings, actually. One is they're the item that get returned the least. So somebody may gift someone a pair of earrings or a necklace and they may or may not take to it. They may not love it and they'll send it back for a swap it for something else or do something else. Engagement rings hardly ever come back. And what does that mean to me? It means that us guys agonize over the ring. But the reality is we'd have to go quite a long way to get it wrong.
With you.
And the occasion, the emotion and the whole engagement, it's going to be hard for a woman not to love the ring because the ring symbolizes so much more than just the way it looks. And so you'd have to go pretty wrong to get it wrong.
I'm with you. So do you think that this is a lot of self-inflicted pressure on guys?
Yeah, I think it's hard for guys. Yeah, and I think that whole thing about the proposal, it's all kind of coming into that one purchase. You know, and it's a tough time for guys. It is a tough time. And that's why they've got to be sure they can send it back if they don't like it. But trust me, engagement rings hardly ever come back. Hardly ever.
That's really quite interesting and very fascinating. But, you know, I have to say, I really do. You know, you guys are truly producing not only great value jewelry. Because here's the thing, Gary. I don't view you guys as an affordable option for jewelry. I look at you guys as great jewelers. That's genuinely how I look at you guys. Because the product that you're making, and this is not me, you know, being an arselick or anything like that. This is just a genuine feeling that I've had. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be able to have experience with some of the higher end, the quote unquote higher end jewelers. And I have to say, you know, when I take one of your rings and another ring, which is 10 times more, but has the same kind of measurements, the same kind of stone in there and whatnot, and it is over 10 times more expensive, I'm really splitting hairs, mate, when I'm trying to discern the differences between the two. There are differences. And when I pull out the jeweler's loop, and I do have a jeweler's loop, when I pull out the loop, which is that little for people who don't know, it's that little magnifying thing that you stick in your eye, I can start telling the differences. That's when I can, and when I look inside the cradle, maybe I can see a little bit of finishing differences and stuff like that. But I'm talking really starting to split hairs here. And am I seeing a 10 times difference in finishing and craftsmanship? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You guys are genuinely great jewelers. You're fabulous at what you're doing. And you're truly consumer conscious. You're understanding that there is this huge, you know, gap in the market where people want to buy beautiful stuff, but maybe they don't have 25 grand for a bloody ring that should cost, you know, 4 grand. So that's how I view you guys. And I know that it's very much about providing value, affordability and stuff like that. And even your very high-end stuff is still very affordable for most, you know, young professionals who have a bit of disposable income.
Yeah,
I think there was a report that was released that people between the ages of 25 and 32 are now the highest earners and the highest percentage of homeowners across the world.
Wow.
You know, millennials now have an earning power which is unprecedented in previous generations. So for most millennials, even your highest end products are fairly affordable. You know, we're talking 3, 4, 5, 6, 7,000 pounds. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very affordable when you compare it to the comparable products, which are 10 times more expensive. It's absolute madness. You guys do a beautiful tennis bracelet, which a very similar one is being sold at Boodles for just under 100,000 pounds. So it's out of control, the kind of brand tax that these other brands are able to charge. But you guys are not producing a subpar product. You are producing a product which is comparable to that. Yes, there are differences, but those differences, you're going to really have to start to split hairs to tell the difference. So I think what's really great about what you guys are doing is you're educating the public. You're helping them to understand what a lab diamond is, what a natural diamond is, giving them the choice, and also saying that we have a certain standard that we hold ourselves to, and you should also hold us to that as well. And I think that's a great thing. I really do. I have a great deal of admiration for that. And you're really producing some top quality stuff.
Thank you. I love that feedback. It's wonderful to hear. And that is essentially what we've set out to do. That's essentially what we don't want to be known as an online jeweler. We are a jeweler. We've got a huge range. We've got great value. One of the other things I forgot about the engagement rings, by the way, is that it's specifically with the cost. We offer 0% finance, up to 12 months, 0% finance.
Oh, no way.
And the biggest product that's taken on is actually engagement rings because it helps spread the cost. Wow. Because a lot of other costs go around an engagement too, a proposal. The biggest takers of finance on our site are engagement ring buyers. Guys, spreading the cost, making it a bit easier, a little bit less stressful. That's for sure.
One other thing that I found quite interesting is the variation of an engagement ring under particular lighting. And you guys have kind of got around that by particularly with your slightly higher end products. I think you guys refer them to as heirloom quality, right?
Yeah.
It's quite interesting where you provide a particular light in the ring box, which provides you with that that fire and excellence in the diamond.
Yeah, actually, there's a backstory to that. It's quite a funny backstory. So I gave my wife a ring. I can't remember why, but it was quite a long time ago. It must have been a birthday. So anyway, we didn't have the right lighting and the sun wasn't shining and all that stuff. And I gave her the ring and I opened the box and I realized it looked a bit flat. But I knew that this was a beautiful ring. And I thought, the one thing that we can't control. So how do I try and formulate my mind on this? So if you go into a jeweler's shop, the lighting in jewelry shops is amazing. I mean, it's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of thought, a lot of effort gone into it. So the first time you see a ring or a diamond in a jeweler's, you see it with at its best, sparkling. Your memory is of that moment with that diamond.
Yes.
Okay. And if you go in as a couple, which, you know, years ago, people used to go shopping as a couple to buy an engagement ring. When you see it, that's what you see. The one bit we couldn't control when we were shipping jewelry was the environment in which people were receiving the jewelry in, i.e. when they were opening the box. And that's what happened to me. It wasn't very bright, it wasn't very light, and the ring looked a little flat, even though I knew it was a great ring. So we went away, went to our box supplier and said, can we put an LED light in the box? How does that work? And we've had that for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. I love it. And we put it in a lot of the engagement rings and all engagement rings and a lot of other rings over a certain price point. The box is actually pretty expensive, if I'm honest. If you imagine we have to get a box handmade and they're putting the LED lights in, it's quite hard and it's quite expensive. But for me, the effect and the difference of ambience it creates when given the ring is worth every penny. It's brilliant. I love it.
I agree. And kind of as a final point, I do want to mention that you guys are creating great jewelry and I love your stuff, right? But so many brands that I've come across that create great products for an affordable price point, they have to cut a corner. And that corner is always in the packaging and the unboxing mm-hmm. experience. Always. Yeah. You guys have not done that. You have absolutely not done that at all. And I remember, I think I emailed you. I can't remember if we spoke about this or I emailed you or whatever it was. And I said, I think you guys are using the same boxes that Boodles do. Because I've got a Boodle. This is a Boodles ring.
Yeah.
And this came in exactly the same ring box that you guys are putting your rings in. But the difference is this was the same price as the piece that, and the difference is that this is just a plain metal band.
Yeah.
And the thing that you sent over was covered in bloody diamonds and sapphires.
Yeah.
So.
Well, at the end of the day, there's only so many jewelry box suppliers, I suppose, around. So, there's an interesting thing. So apart from the light, the other thing we want with the box is what's called the snap. So when you close one of our boxes, we want it to snap shut. I don't know why, but we've fussed over that quite a lot.
Appeal. Yeah.
Yeah. So we want you to hear it close. It's just a little detail that we've fussed over for quite a while. The other thing that we steered away from, which a lot of people asked us to do, and the reason is this. So a lot of people ask us if we can gift wrap it, if we can gift tie it, put it on, etc. And we did do that for a while, quite a few years ago. But what we found is this. Because jewelry is quite a considered purchase, because it's normally bought for a big special occasion, whatever that is, birthday, anniversary, graduation, birth of a child, but it's always for a reason.
Yes.
The person buying it generally is excited to see it before they give it. So we were beautifully gift wrapping everything and tying bows in it, and then they'd have to open it, and then they couldn't get it back wrapped up. So what we do is when we're packing them in our boxes, we have an outer box, which is to protect, but then everything inside, we let people assemble for themselves. And another thing we wanted to do, especially where people are sending the gift to someone else, they might not want or have the time, or they don't want to send a card separately. So we, after you've bought an item from us on the final page of after you've made payment, you can type in a message, and we put that on a beautiful credit card sized gift message card in a beautiful orange envelope. And everybody I've ever spoken to, that's the thing they remember, apart from the jewelry. That's the part of the packaging they remember, and that's the bit they keep. Indeed. Because that card symbolizes everything about that gift. Whatever it is. And 90% of our purchasers opt for a gift card. It's free. I mean, we put it in and we print it. But 90% of customers take us up on that. And I love that. Yeah.
And once again, this is all part of a product that is already very good value for money.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I think that's extraordinary. Like I said, as I opened up by saying that I have a great deal of admiration for what you've been able to achieve and create with the Diamond Store. And it's very rare that you see somebody who has not only created something which is successful and great, but you've created it clearly for the right reasons as well, which is why I've been so excited to introduce you to my audience, to provide them with some education, because, you know, unfortunately, there has been a tyranny of jewelry companies, and they rely on this on aspiration blinding people, unfortunately. And that's what most luxury brands rely on. They rely on the value of their brand. Whether it's, you know, I've been very active in helping people to understand the value of clothing, comparing them to brands that I myself have spent my money on, the same way I've spent my money on these jewelry companies. You know, I'll give you an example. I used to buy my comfortable shoes from a brand called Loro Piana, mm-hmm. Which is a great Italian brand.
Yeah.
They make extremely high-end stuff, like unnecessarily high-end stuff. And I was contacted by this English company called Goral. And they said, hey, we heard that you wear Loro Piana. We make similar shoes, but the difference is instead of spending 1,100 quid on them, we sell them for just under £300. We'll send you a few pairs and let us know what you think. I have put my Loro Pianas to the back of the wardrobe.
Wow.
And the reason is because once you educate yourself about what they're producing, you're buying the brand. They're a beautiful pair of shoes, but they are a single use pair of shoes for over £1,000. That makes no sense to me anymore. Mm-hmm. They should be resolable and they're not. They're not. They are not resolable. Once the sole is run out, you throw them in the bin, amazingly.
Actually, I did have a similar issue with a pair of Salvatore Ferragamo shoes.
Which are made in exactly the same factory.
Yeah.
Loro Piana and Ferragamo are made in the same factory.
Yeah.
So, you throw them in the bin. They are not resolable. It is a cemented construction. They are glued on, very similar to how a Primark shoe is glued on. Or a H&M shoe is glued on. Or a Nike running shoe is also glued on as well.
Yeah.
But the difference is instead of spending £50, you're spending £1,000.
Yeah.
So, and that interview should be coming out on Monday, I think. So it should be quite interesting. But, it's been very, very fascinating providing education on these things. Because like I said, brands and marketing and aspiration blind an individual. And even most people know that they're buying shit, they're buying something that's overpriced, but because of the social look, they want to go for that and they know it. But, you know, it's something where it's just education. You need to know what you're buying and you need to know that it's all the same bloody thing.
Yeah, but we're in an interesting time of change, Omar. And I think it goes back to what you were saying about people under 33, 35 years old. I am older than that. I fall into the next demographic, unfortunately, or the demographic after that, even. And if you think about when I grew up, what happened was you had your brands that were on the high street, on the shops,
yep.
And you everybody else went to the same brands. You didn't question that. You couldn't look very easily for other items or other brands in a different city would mean a trip in another country was unheard of. How would you know? Mail order catalog shopping kind of changed that a little bit, but it didn't really make any impact. We're now in a situation where we as consumers can search out the items that we really want. Like you're a very, very well-informed guy on all subjects, clothing, jewelry, cars, glasses, everything, eyewear. Because we can do that. Now, mm-hmm. I don't believe that you could have done that 20 years ago. And 100%. This is where we're in a bit of flux. And the old brands are trying to obviously protect their branding and their status and their standing. But new brands, as you mentioned, Goral, and I put ourselves in that group and Son of a Tailor with t-shirts we talked about earlier.
Totally.
If people do the research and they can buy the same quality, in fact, even better quality for a lot less money, you can do that now. But actually, you couldn't do that 20 years ago because you didn't have the tools, you didn't have the necessary, you just couldn't do it, and you can now. So we are in a situation of change. I don't know where it will all end up, but we are in a definite situation of change. What will it do? It will force the big brands to really look at what they're doing as well. It will do that and how they're doing it and how they're pricing. It will force that issue.
Totally agree. And, you know, the fact is that you guys are not, you know, small fries in the industry. You guys are a market leader. I know it's so, I know it's so common for founders and stuff like that to say, oh no, we're a small fish in a big pond and all that, you know. Let's just cut the bullshit for a second. No, you're not. Yeah. You know, you guys are the market leaders. And I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I think it's the actions of what you guys have been doing, some of the ripples you've been creating, which is now forcing brands like Pandora, like hopefully more brands in the future start to adopt this. because the benefits of lab diamonds are just, you know, they far outweigh the romanticism of knowing that your thing came out of the earth. It's really where the world is moving to. People want sustainably focused products at the end of the day, regardless of whether it's luxurious or it's not. And I think that the idea of quality and sustainability is there's no gap between that anymore. You can have a very high end luxury product that is sustainable now, which is very interesting in the market. But like I said, I have a great deal of admiration and respect for what you guys are doing. I think that you are an absolutely fabulous individual as well. You know, like I said, we've, aside from all the stuff we've spoken about with jewelry, we've had so many personal conversations as well about clothing and cars and some great things and stuff like that. So it's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you. I'm very excited to continue doing this as well. Yeah, I think this is going to be great.
Okay, brilliant. I'm happy to come back on at any time, talk about different things that people can gift each other. Gifting, we talked a lot about engagement rings today, but actually, I'd say the biggest selling reason, or the biggest reason people buy our jewelry is for birthdays.
Birthdays makes perfect sense.
Because just the sheer volume of birthday numbers are huge. Only a certain amount of people get engaged every year, but of course
everyone's got a birthday. Yeah,
exactly. So and birthdays are interesting. That's when our customer service team come into their own. That they help the guys who are nervous about buying engagement rings. That's a gift. But actually, birthdays is interesting because it's quite a personal gift as well if you're giving jewelry. And a lot of people want a little bit of guidance and they're unsure which way to go with jewelry. But it's the single biggest reason that people buy our jewelry is birthdays.
Agreed. I think that there was an interesting topic that we covered previously with regards to jewelry, which was, you know, men wearing jewelry is it's a bit of a difficult subject for most people. You know, it's deemed as feminine, to be completely honest. You know, the old engagement ring is fine, the watch is fine, but when you start wearing a necklace, when you start wearing a bracelet, things like that, there's a bit of femininity there, and it can be a bit difficult for some guys. So we made an episode all about how men can create what we call the jewelry capsule wardrobe, which is quite interesting.
I listened to it.
Yeah, and that was quite interesting and quite fascinating to see the reaction of how guys bought that on. And I cannot tell you, Gary, how many guys reached out to me and said, I can't tell you how many times I'm made fun of by my family whenever I wear a necklace or I wear, you know, something that's interesting that I'm trying to express my personality with. That's got nothing to do with femininity or whatever. Jewelry is separate from sexuality or anything like that. It's an expression, the same way that you would wear a certain pair of shoes or a shirt or some pants or whatever, or a hat, or a pair of frames, whatever it might be. So it was really, really interesting. You know, there's clearly a thirst and a hunger for this kind of information out there. And very dissimilar to something like clothing, jewelry can last several lifetimes. And it should.
Yes, definitely.
And I think that's what's really interesting about purchasing jewelry is it's not a disposable thing. It should never be something disposable, which is why I absolutely detest jewelry that's made from you know, really weird, dodgy materials that, you know, they diminish over time. I think that's a terrible thing. At the end of the day, you're adding to waste. You're adding to the landfills. Don't do that. Just buy something, invest in it, and you can wear it for a lifetime. So I think there's so many different realms for us to explore here.
Yeah, I think the other thing that when I talk to my friends and my family about jewelry, the other thing that I love about jewelry is that as a gift, as if you receive an item of jewelry as a gift, for the rest of your life, you will remember who gave it to you and when.
Yeah.
And there are hardly any other gifts that you will remember that. So you might be given a jumper or an item of clothing or whatever. And you won't really remember when you got it or how you came across it. But actually, jewelry, every item you've got, you remember. There's a little bit of a backstory with it, and it'll bring a smile to your face. And that's what I love about selling jewelry.
No, please.
It's that our jewelry plays a part of someone's life and their life story. And I love that that side of it.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think that there's just a certain level of pride that you have to take as someone who has a jewelry company, as someone who is producing things that you know that people may be wearing every single day for decades. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you are producing these heirloom quality pieces, you're producing them not only for decades but for generations.
Yeah.
So you know, it must be a great feeling to know that something that you've made is going to provide happiness and pride, and you know, memories for decades and decades and decades to come. There must be a great deal of satisfaction there.
Yeah, and funny enough, we touched on Instagram earlier where we're saying it put people under pressure buying rings. Actually, one of the things I love on Instagram is I love it when people tag us and I can see our items being worn by people, being received, and actually, because every one of them is happy. They're happy events, they're happy occasions. I love seeing our jewelry being tagged. I love that. That's the good side of Instagram.
Yeah, agreed. It has its benefits. It really does. But, you know, unfortunately with Instagram culture, there's just, you know, at the end of the day, you know, too much of something, it's polluting.
Yeah.
You know, it's everything in moderation, I say. Instagram is a great thing, but don't run your life by it. I think that's probably, a good way to go about it.
As a brand owner, I love it when our customers photograph and tag us. I love it.
Yeah. And you know what? To hear something is one thing, but then to just see, you know, when you zoom into a picture and you see that someone's wearing one of your pieces of jewelry or something like that, it must be brilliant, because they're going to look at those pictures for years and they're going to be like, oh yeah, I was wearing that piece. And you know, it attaches itself to so many memories in someone's life.
Yeah. Actually, it was a few years ago now, but the first time I realized we were making inroads as a brand was when somebody came for an interview and they were wearing one of our rings that they'd been given as an engagement ring the year before. Yeah. And that was when you realize, actually, I think we're a bit bigger than we thought we were.
Exactly. And, you know, like I said, you know, there is... It's really an absolute pleasure when you come across brands that, number one, recognize that they're doing great things. And I think you guys really do recognize that you're doing great things, because when you recognize that, you then decide that you need to do more great things. And you guys are clearly doing that with the integration of recycled metals, and which is fabulous. I mean, I recently started researching this, and I had no idea that you guys were getting involved in it. And it was going to be one of my questions today. So it was great that you mentioned that already.
We're working hard to get our become carbon neutral as well. So we're trying to do both things at the same time. But the recycled gold we've been working on for a long time. We're there. We just need to get everything together to launch that.
But
it's already, buy a lab diamond ring from us now, it is being made with recycled gold.
That's is that sure. right?
Yeah, but we just haven't publicize that fact yet.
Oh wow. Okay, fair enough. When just for my audience, when do you think that you guys are going to look at publicizing that?
In the next 4 to 6 weeks we'll start pushing out material on that. It's just got to be written and, you know, added to the website and go through that process, but probably for the last 2 or 3 months, any lab diamond item, I mean, before that the chances are it was. But we can say, hand on heart, with all the necessary paperwork, that it's now recycled gold.
Extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Great job, mate. Honestly, you know, that's absolutely fabulous.
You.
Like real kudos to that. That's absolutely fantastic. But honestly, Gary, I have to say it's been an absolute pleasure having this chat with you. I'm excited to have more in the future as well. I think it's going to be really fun, really great. You're clearly a wealth of knowledge when it comes to this stuff. What I'm also going to say to my audience as well is, if there's anything in particular that you'd like Gary to touch upon in any future episodes, just let me know. Go on the website, send me a message, and I'll make sure that I touch upon that in future conversations. Yeah. But until then, Gary, once again, thank you so much for your time. I really, really do appreciate it. And yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure's mine too. Thanks so much. It's been great.